tucked away, right?
Of course.
Good afternoon. Welcome everybody out to our notice meeting. Go ahead and get started. I'm City Council member Mike Gay, District 2. We'll go ahead and do introductions.
Michael Boylan, District 6.
Good afternoon. Tyrone Clark Murray, District 9.
Dustin Freeman, Chief of Procurement.
Philip Peterson, Counselor's Office.
Office of General Counsel, Lasekia Hodges.
Appreciate everyone coming out and getting tuned in to what we are looking to do here for our purchasing changes. I guess the first topic we'll get into is the owner direct purchases. If Dina or Steve, which one are y'all gonna? If you want, come up. Oh, and I'd like to welcome Council Member Jacoby Pittman.
I do.
Thank you. Is that a yes, somebody? Thank you. Thank you so much.
So we've been provided, Ms. Pittman, we're going to go ahead and address the owner direct purchases to begin with. Public Works has provided us this documentation of what they've utilized over the past. Ms. Sickler, if you want to give us kind of an overview of what you got in your package.
Sure, yeah, I'll describe what's in your packet, and then I know Steve has been involved in a lot of these as well, so if we've got additional questions, both of us can tag team to answer any questions you may have. So what you have in front of you is a two-page spreadsheet. It's got five projects where direct materials purchases were utilized. And what you'll see is, of course, the name of the project, and there's a number of invoices that were involved in that process. And then to the right, you'll see the tax savings that were obtained through that process. And so just as a background, we are able to use direct material purchasing right now. We use it selectively for the appropriate projects. And I know there may be further discussion about what that number may be, but for the ones that were selected and utilized within Public Works, you'll see that the amount of materials purchased ranged anywhere from $864,000 to $383,000, and then the Jaguar Sports Performance Center is at $25 million. So they were fairly large projects where the tax savings balanced out what the additional staff requirements were. So in those cases where you have 205 invoices, that may be 2 hours per invoice when you look at the cost of our CEI as well as our administrative staff to process those. And in these cases, it was determined to be useful, and a savings was realized, even accounting for the staff time required.
All right, thank you. Now, this tax savings item that we're referring to was the Amendment 1, Item 9F, that was going through committee that we pulled out for the time being, so we could have further conversation. Which you know, going through the tax savings, it's kind of evident that we see that there is a benefit for the tax savings. But the, I guess where we're missing it at is there's a bigger benefit that if we go ahead and get it implemented to where it's fully utilized through the procurement and public works and what's not reflected here, and we've got to look at it as well, is ASM Global and our other users that are using the city property that we can capitalize on using our tax-exempt status. And, you know, I'm all about getting more and more money saved back into the city to where we can reinvest that. Now, Dustin, would you have any, I guess, information on what purchases we have done for ASM Global?
Dustin Freeman, Procurement Division, through the chair to the committee. I tried to run those numbers in our Oracle Fusion system yesterday. The system's set up that has a reporting function where in order for it to capture the requested data, there has to be a flagged toggle button, if you will. We do this for emergency purchases. We've got it for single source purchases. Just be able to run reports. I tried to do this yesterday for all direct material purchases for the city to include public works. That feature is not implemented within the Oracle system. I put a ticket in with Oracle, so they're currently working it. So it's not to say it can't happen. It's just saying currently I was unable to pull total data for the entire city. And to piggyback on that, without the Oracle system, our financial system of record, if I was to capture that data, I'd have to go into each individual hard copy bid file and pull the certificates of entitlement. I don't know what the PO assigned to the direct material purchases is.
And that was one of the challenges we had in getting a lot of the data to total, you know, to dissect what each one is. So we've got somewhat of an idea from what Public Works has put together.
Yeah, I think this is very helpful. I question with respect to 9F. Are we looking at a possible threshold number to say below a certain or above a certain number?
The school board, I know for sure the JAA and the JPA and a lot of other municipalities use a $10,000 threshold. And the problem that I see with making that threshold higher is we basically put it out of reach for our small emerging businesses to be able to use this buying power from the city to help them get projects and be competitive. Because, you know, one thing we're faced with.
You're talking two different goals then. You're talking about one, tax savings. You're secondly talking about making sure create opportunities for JSIP as well.
Yes, sir. It's multi-beneficial that I see that we're able to do that. And one of the problems we hear constantly, JSIP's prices are high. Mm-hmm. Well,
because they're buying the equipment.
They struggle with buying power. And so
let me ask a question. I'm using the spreadsheet that we have, and Ms. Sickler or maybe Mr. Long will speak to this. I'm going to take a couple examples here. For example, under the River Place Boulevard Bicycle and Pedestrian Improvements, there's a $45,000 purchase. The savings, tax savings, was nearly $3,000. But what was the cost, below the line cost? Maybe, Phil, you can speak to this as well, Mr. Peterson, as to what does it cost your office to manage and oversight on these kind of purchases. That's really the crux of the issue for me. If there's a threshold, and I appreciate the 10 number works, but I'm wondering if a higher threshold is much more responsible in terms of a cost savings of the taxpayer dollars.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Steve Long, Public Works. Very good question. What ends up happening, like when you look at that specific example, so we had four invoices. An invoice, when it comes in, the prime on the project is still involved in that invoicing, so we're going to pay them for time they're spending on that invoice. The company we're using is our CEI company. They're going to spend time on that invoice. It comes in, our project manager goes through it and makes sure it's accurate and complete. Then it goes into our accounting people, which then would put it into the system and pay it. Outside of us, there's also time in our finance department as we enter stuff into OneCloud. But you could look at potentially for any one invoice, by the time you go through that many people, you end up paying for 4 or 5 hours of time. So if you were to take a salary and, you know, by the time you load in benefits, that sort of thing, you're looking, you know, on low ends, $50 an hour. So you're talking about like $250 of processing for each invoice. And when you sit there and you look at like that particular one, we saved $2,900. But by the time you go through and pay those four invoices, you're $1,600 to $2,000 just within the public works. That's not counting finance and potentially somebody in procurement doing their portion. So your savings really starts getting whittled down. And if you look at the first example on our spreadsheet, that one was a $32,000 tax savings. But we achieved that $32,000 tax savings with 157 invoices. There, once you start applying those same kind of numbers, processing 157 invoices, we actually paid more in processing than we would have saved. So that's why when you start talking about like a $10,000 threshold, that just seems very low, because if you start having numerous invoices come in on that, we end up spending more money on the processing than we do on the actual savings.
So the $10,000 invoice isn't invoiced one time. It's over a period of time. You may get four $2,500 invoices.
It varies, depending on what the material is. If it's a JSEB supplier or non-JSEB supplier, it can vary. So you could have one that could be $25,000. It could be one invoice, but you could also have one that could be $10,000 that could be five invoices.
I
so
see
it just
a train
varies.
Invoice that's fairly significant, but you can almost expect the train invoice to be multiple invoices.
Yes, sir.
Different components, different compressor systems or whatever the handlers that are going to be putting in. I guess that's my only concern, Councilmember Gay, is the fact that we may, by having a very low threshold, we're going to be spending more money in processing invoices than the savings that we could realize in taxes. I'll leave it.
Hello, Mr. Long. So I am trying to understand where the additional costs come from in regards to processing the paperwork. I'm going to use the term paperwork or invoices. So a person who has this as a part of their job description, it's not already built into the job description where they have, for example, a salary, and this is a part of their job description, or you're saying that this is when they have to do this type of paperwork, that it's something additional? I'm trying to understand that part, where that cost comes in, where it would reduce the amount of savings, it reduces the amount of tax savings.
Yes, ma'am. And we do have employees who that is a part of their project, their job. But what ends up happening is when you look at these type of numbers of invoices, right now, if we had a project that didn't have direct materials, our contractor is getting invoices in from all of their suppliers, their subs, their own workforce. They're submitting an invoice, and they may be submitting one invoice a month. So on a project, we may be paying one invoice a month. You start looking at a project where they have 157 invoices on a job that takes 18 months. Now all of a sudden you're talking about, you know, 10 invoices a month on just this one material. And then if we're looking at doing this on every single project, what that ends up meaning is Public Works would more than likely need to hire additional manpower just for the processing of these invoices, just because of the numbers being so high. So the cost we're seeing would be offset by the cost of additional personnel to make sure that we were staying on top of this, and that sort of thing. So that's where, when we start talking about those costs, that's where those costs are coming from.
All right, thank you. So, thank you, Mr. Long. So my question, this is follow-up. So in regards to the particular, we're using JSEB, so I'm just going to go ahead and use JSEB. So if there is a contractor, subcontractor, that's JSEB, and they have invoices, do they not take care of their own invoices, or is that something that they submit to the city and then the city has to take care of them? Because I'm trying to figure out where we could possibly split maybe a threshold. Does the city and the JSEB, do they have to have the same threshold in regards to the tax savings? Or I'm trying to figure out where
I would kind of go back to Dustin and Public Works on this, because if we start having two different policies, I don't know how, you know, keeping up with that. I just see that if we have a higher threshold than what a JSEP dollar amount project is going to be, then they're not getting that opportunity. But to answer your question about the invoices, invoices would come to the city, because it has to be invoiced to the city for the tax exempt status. The city would require from whoever's the purchasing for the material, who the material is being purchased for, will have to sign off on the delivery tickets that the material has been delivered to go back to the user to be paid. And typically, after a certain point, the Public Works would issue a deductive change order minus the material plus the sales tax to the contract, whoever they were dealing with.
So if I understand correctly, Councilmember Gay, it doesn't matter whether it's JSEP or if it's the city, it still has to, the invoice at some point has to come back to the city and has to be processed through the city.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes,
ma'am. All right. Thank you.
For tax savings purposes. Right.
Thank you.
To Councilman Gay, and that's kind of what I was going to ask, because I know I work for a nonprofit, and if we purchase the materials, then we get that back, and it sounds like it's almost the same. So we're just doing it for the JSEP programs, right?
Well, right now we're doing it for any, we have the ability to do it on any project right now. And we do it on projects when we find that it makes financial sense to the city to do it. But it's probably a similar process to what you're using. When we do it, we have a tax-exempt ID number,
right,
and we use that number so that way we get it and we don't have to pay the tax.
Right, exactly.
The potential, you know, when you're sitting there and you're going, if our contractors are ordering it, they're not tax-exempt, so they're paying that additional tax on top of it. So when we get the chance, we save that 7%.
Okay, but is that across the board, or is it just with certain companies, or if it's $100,000 or more, how is that determined right now?
Right now, we try to do it strictly on larger projects so that we're sure that we're going to see a completely realized savings. Because if we show we're saving $31,000, but yet the additional manpower work that we're paying a contractor, paying a CEI, paying in-house, comes above that $35,000, then we did it, and we might show that we saved, but in reality, we really didn't. So we're trying to do it mainly on our larger projects currently.
So there's nothing in place right now for across the board, right? Is that what we're saying? And then you're trying to make sure, I'm just trying to understand the process. And then for the JSEBs to be a part of this, let's just say, you know, their project might be $200,000. You probably wouldn't consider that, because that might not be a whole lot of savings for you.
Currently, right now, that's correct. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And I guess the other piece to this is, when you're doing a contract, normally there's administrative fees that's usually added to that. And so now it just looks like we're considering or looking at maybe the tax savings to that.
Right, because when our contractors submit a project, whether we do direct materials or not, they have cost on their end administratively. But what we're looking at is when we do this type of process where it generates even more administrative function, we see there's going to be additional cost on the city side, on our CEI side, and potentially even on the contractor side. So that's why we've been trying to look at those costs overall to see if it balances out any savings we have when we get into those smaller amounts. That's why for us, on a cost savings basis, we think this idea is a very good idea. It's just we want to make sure we do it to where the city actually realizes the savings.
But it's, and I'm just speaking on my side, if we only do this for the larger projects and the smaller projects will not get an opportunity, you know, $100,000, or let's say even if it was $300,000, to have that tax saving from a small JSEP project, that's a lot for them. So I don't know if we need to look at even a tier kind of thing, you know, if it's not over, and you know, tier is my thing, you know that, right? So it's easier to track and all of that. If the threshold is $200,000, that may help those small businesses. Maybe it be, that's the threshold, that we don't look beyond that, but everybody's kind of getting a piece of the action and saving. It may not be a whole lot of savings to the city, but to that small business, it is. Because Jacoby Pittman Tire Company that's buying, you know, let's say if y'all buying tires for a fleet for a small number, and it's, you know, $200,000, and I can save by utilizing kind of like the city's tax thing, well, then I'm making more money.
Oh, the actual...
If I could just clarify that, ma'am. So the city doesn't pay sales tax.
Right, I understand
we're exempt.
That.
If there's an invoice that's submitted, the user agency verifies there's no tax, there's no sales tax on there. Accounts payable will verify it. If they do identify any type of sales tax on invoices, they'll do a partial payment, like the Councilmember Gay said, and then tell them we're not paying sales tax. So we catch it if it's ever submitted, but... Most of the 90% of the invoices submitted to the city for everything doesn't include sales tax.
Right. Right. But I guess I'm asking, if we're going to do that for the big boys, we got to do it for the little boys too, right? Yeah. And maybe there is a form, because a lot of them might not even know that you're even doing this, right? So I'm asking, I'm not, I don't know, I'm just asking, if we're doing business with smaller organizations and we're doing tax savings for the larger companies, we share with them, if we're doing business with them on the front end before we get anything signed, that listen, we have a tax incentive program or tax savings program that you all can get. So when you get the invoices back from those small businesses, you don't have to look. Because if I can save some money and you all are telling me that I can save money, I'm going to complete that form before I even start doing business is what I'm asking.
Right, but I want to make sure that we all understand that the company, the contractor, doesn't save any money. So right now, if it's a...
Well, it's saving... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
If it's a $200,000 supply...
Mm-hmm.
That $200,000 supply, when they pay their supplier, there's tax on it, and they're paying $214,000. So now that we would direct contract, we would pay $200,000, but the contractor doesn't keep that other $14,000.
Right, it comes back to you.
It comes back to us. So
correct.
There's no benefit to a large contractor on this plan.
Okay.
There's more work for a large contractor on this plan, but there's no benefit to them. The only benefit is the actual... Yeah. To the city if we save the funds.
I think the benefit that you spoke to is the advantage of a larger company who has a greater leverage because they buy in greater quantities.
Right.
So if you take that $200,000 piece of equipment, we buy it, we pay $200,000 for it. he may pay 180 for it, still charges 200, by the way.
Right.
And so they're making up that difference, but that's another story for another time.
Okay.
But it really, but I, your point's well taken. I'd be curious to know, it, maybe we don't know, but of the sports performance, are there any JSTEP companies in that number there?
I would have to.
Because I think to the to your point, it doesn't preclude the opportunities for JSTEP to participate.
Right.
The city makes a determination that we're going to spend $5.5 million on this facility and buy the equipment ourselves. The JSTEP, like the big guys, will have an opportunity to get that business at the same time.
Right. And that's my only point. Right.
If,
you know.
If I can interject here, what where the advantage comes in with a smaller company that's JSTEP, whether it's JSTEP or not, that's just getting established, they don't have the credit history to where they can go in and a particular supplier may charge a different, what do you call, a column pricing for somebody with better credit and somebody with lesser credit. But when they go in and say, hey, give me a price for this material, in the city of Jackson, we'll be direct purchasing it.
Right.
Well, the risk factor for that supplier selling is diminished. Mm-hmm. And so then they are more apt to get a better price. That, but material now is just going crazy, but as the best price as they can get. And so that's the benefit for them. And in the process of doing the change orders, the direct purchases, when Public Works does the deductive change order, well, then that comes out, and so the contractor, JSTEP, normally is a 10% retainage factor. Well, that material that comes out doesn't have the retainage held on it because it's deducted out of their contract. So we actually are putting more capital back into the contractor across the board to be able to get the project completed, and which it there's benefits all around. But is there a process that we would have to adapt to make this happen? I mean, Dustin's going to be faced with this as well of restructuring this whole bill is to restructure procurement. So he's got to retrain and get adapted to new policies and procedures. So, I mean, it's going to be a little uncomfortable at first, but I think we can get there, and I'm all about if we can, the value of a dollar, and we can save a dollar, every dollar matters.
Can I just make one point?
Yes, sir.
We're all clear that this direct material purchase is for capital projects only, right?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make sense to do that on if you're buying a laptop, you know, paying for materials. So you'll have to pay for warehouse storages.
Mm-hmm.
We're never going to get rid of embedded taxes on supplies. They're going to include that in the rates. But I'm just being clear, this is strictly for capital.
Okay.
Capital projects, and if we can get it implemented into ASM and their purchasing to where, you know, they write, ASM right now, I believe, has a $500,000 cap that they can go and purchase without going through Dustin. So, you know, we got a lot of opportunity there, and we got a lot of other users around that we got to explore to be able to get as much benefit back. But if I may, Steve, Mr. Long, what last year, what do you project was the capital improvement expenditures? Just roughly, I mean, just
materials or in
project?
I believe the CIP last year was just $500 million. I don't believe all of that was spent, but you know, the actual CIP program approved through $500 million, and when I say last year, I'm talking about 22, 23.
Right. We just talked. That's the total cost. That doesn't. breakout.
Right. So, and so the rule of thumb, would you say material would be 50 to 60%?
The rule of thumb is I would have to talk to a contractor to kind of find out.
On a conservative end, we would say 50%.
On construction, but we're also spending money on planning and design. So, you know, I would estimate closer to a third, maybe.
Yeah,
may make
I mean,
more
because
sense.
You've got design cost in there.
So if we say 30%.
30%. That's
reasonable. So. Close. Say 150 million. So in that range, 100 to 150 million, I would say that that's justification enough to be able to implement, even if we had to hire additional staff to be able to recoup some of this, because you would. $10.5 million. Right. So that's what theoretically that you would be looking at the tax savings. Just
there are other limitations then. I think you mentioned the other day. Excuse me, interrupting. And then, but now, listen. You buy this equipment and it sits idle for 6 months. You got a warranty that's expiring, et cetera. Whereas that would be in the hands of the contractor.
There are some downsides. Things like that, but then also, if we have a contract with a contractor that says they're going to be done with the job in 360 days, if we order the supply, and now the supply is coming in and taking longer than it should have, and it's causing delays, now the contractor looks at us and says we're delayed because of the city. Has nothing to do with us. You guys ordered that material. That material took longer to come in. The material takes too long to come in. You run the risk of a contractor having to shut down and demobilize from a project. So there's definitely upside, but there's also just downside just to be aware of.
Chair, can I say, just so that everybody's reminded, so in the original amendment for Councilmember Gay, we had an exception. So the case that Steve is mentioning makes total sense, that it wouldn't make sense to use an ODP program there. But the language included, we had language that said, you know, the procurement chief would develop an owner direct purchase program. We did have that threshold amount regarding purchases that were exceeding 10,000. So you can change that number if you're not comfortable with that number. But there was a huge out, because we said unless, so you require the owner direct purchase unless the chief determines in consultation with the using agency, Public Works, Parks, whoever, that the city's participation in owner direct purchase for procurement is not feasible and are beneficial to the city's interests. So I just want to point out that the Gay Amendment as originally presented had a huge, you know, out for exactly Steve and Nina's concerns. It wasn't a requirement across the board that you have to do this, because with the conversations with council auditors, with the using agency, you know, Councilmember Gay recognized that you needed to have that out for exactly that scenario that Steve, you know, just mentioned. But you may, I think where the discussion was in committees was that threshold of 10,000, bearing in mind that whatever your threshold is, there's always going to be and out.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hodges. What I've given y'all is a typical, this is from the Volusia County School Boards. And in any contract, there's the verbiage that basically outlines the procedures. And in a nutshell of what this is saying is that we, the city, are just a purchasing conduit. The liability, the responsibility, and the installation and the warranty, it's still burdened by the contractor. So we're not assuming any of that. It's on them to do their due diligence to get the material purchased approved and purchased and installed on the job. So we will not be relieving them of that, and that's the standard protocol throughout all ODP owner direct purchases throughout the industry. So
could I go back to what Ms. Hodges said with respect to the out? There isn't embedded in the bill what that those out that out requirements of that out, correct? So Dustin, maybe you speak. What would you use a consideration to say that this should not apply to this particular transaction?
Well, Chair, this is something that won't be an issue for procurement. I got an agency memo, to me, is all I would require.
You could ask Ms. Sickler to provide you the rationale for not putting this through the direct purchase program.
And typically what would, at the toward the end of the job, a change, and there's a need to get something ordered quick. Well, it doesn't justify the completion of the job being hindered by having to go through a procedural that we need to get it now. And so that's where the out is, but it's not a convenience out that, I don't feel like doing it. We still got to do our due diligence, move it forward. But if there's something that's problematic, then yes, he's got that out to be able to get it done. And so X factors would be the dollar amount on what we would want to be able to establish. And I guess I would go back to the general counsel and to ask, is it where we can take JSEPs and give them a smaller window?
Yes, through the threshold. Chair. Yeah, you could certainly do that. We'd have to, revise the language to basically do, clear directive as to the JSEB, participants, but that's certainly something that you could do in the code. And just remember that the theme of this rewrite was to basically put those foundational points in the code, but we wanted to give our chief of procurement the flexibility to go in and determine the logistics and the administration, whatever made sense, working with the using agencies. So my counsel would be in keeping with the overall theme of the rewrite, that whatever important points are important to the council that you want to make sure are being implemented under all scenarios, that should be in the code. Everything else that's detail, how much paperwork, how long the memo should be, I would recommend you leave that to your procurement chief to determine
right.
those details.
And this is the framework, and Mr. Freeman will be challenged with building inside the framework. But if we get this established, and Mr. Long, if you would, I'd like to know, what would you be comfortable with, a 50,000, 100,000 threshold for non?
I think Ms. Sickler needs to ask.
Ms. Sickler? Steve's like, I done used all my time.
We discussed this at length as to what was reasonable. And, in looking at the numbers and the effort required, we came up with a number of $250,000, and that was by material. So, for instance, if asphalt on a job was $250,000, not just the whole value. Now, obviously, that wasn't necessarily keeping the JSEBs in mind either. That was looking at a standard size CIP project. If a material, any line item, was $250,000 or more, the savings would be likely realized from the work that it would take our department.
That would be one purchase order to one vendor for $250,000.
It would be within a CIP project. As you know, there's multiple bid items. And so if there are 50 bid items and you go through that bid and you see that there's several of them, or even one that's more than $250,000, we would see the savings from that item being direct material purchase.
We're going to get rid of these bid items and just have one lump sum bid.
Next bill.
That's a separate discussion. But
killing us.
So I saw Dustin's eyebrows go up like.
Because if you look at every item, and there are 50 items that the contractor would have to purchase, for instance, that's a lot of work to go through, even the small ones. You know, let's say you've got a pedestrian pole for, you got four of them for $4,000, and you're buying an $8,000 item, and you have to set up a new account with that vendor, and, you know, there's a lot of work if that line item is smaller, not just the whole bid.
Yeah, what I've seen, if you got your, say your asphalt from the asphalt plant, they would get one purchase order for a quantity of asphalt, not per truckload. And so that would be a bulk one purchase order that the city would give to them. They would keep up with turning in the delivery tickets to validate the quantities, and at the end each month or at the end when it's all delivered, they sign off that, yes, we received 2,000 yards of asphalt, and then we approved them to be paid. So that kind of simplifies the number of purchase orders that were going out. So I kind of, looking at the vast variety of projects that we have out there, do you see that the city projects are over $5 million, over most of them's over $10 million, or is most of them underneath that threshold?
From a construction standpoint, I would ask Steve to help me with that, but I would say, you know, over $5 million in general for construction, but there's certainly ones that are smaller than that.
Would the, I guess I'm going to be more on the lower end and see if we can meet at the middle. I would say 100,000 would kind of be a good. I mean, we're looking at $7,000, and so process a $100,000 purchase order, and city saves $7,000. I think we're way ahead of the game there.
I think that was our fallback number, so I think we're good.
We're not going to make a decision today. I think if you may probably want to come back to this group or to the council as a whole. Pardon me for interrupting. As to say, what is the implications of that? If it's a $250,000 threshold, this is what it costs us as a city to do it as a direct. If it's $100,000, how much more would it cost us as a city to manage those accounts and the ups and downs that we talked about? I sort of just a suggestion that we come back to the next meeting to demonstrate. You say it, you know, but I'd love to be able to say, you know, there is a significant difference between 100 and 250 in terms of what it costs us as taxpayers to process it. You get my point?
It's gonna vary by the material.
Of course. Just to say, what is it, you know, the below the line costs to your office, to procurement, to make sure it's met if we are in fact the buyers of that.
And help me understand this. Like, if you use CMC, each time that we send out, is it like an RFP? Is it usually the same companies, or are there different companies that we buy steel from? And how does that work? Because if it's the same companies that we're buying it from, it appears as if you get X amount, and when we reach that threshold, if it's three or four companies that are using that, and you reach that threshold, you'll know exactly how much money it's going to be. But if it's different steel companies every time you go out, is it what's the process?
Well, in the sheet that they provided, this would be all the different projects. You could have CMC on every one of them. Okay. But it's all based on the project and the need. So we may have 20 purchase orders to CMC, mm-hmm. but for 20 different projects. Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of indicative of what the project is. And so each one's going to be each purchase order will have to be processed in its own separate procedure. Is they can't be each one. They can't combine any of the different projects with one purchase order.
Yeah, I was just thinking because, like, for the larger ones, like what is preferred materials? Like, if you know we get a lot of materials and the threshold could be 100,000 invoices, I don't know, for X amount of projects. If we know that, or on the front end, if we've done studies over, let's say, the past 3 to 5 years, and we know we're using these companies, is there a way once, and I don't know if we can do this or not, I'm just kind of thinking outside of the box, if we know every year we're going to use X amount with these companies, can there be a ceiling where there's a threshold where you can track it easy so when the invoices are coming in, you know that you're
everything's going to be basically job specific. So whether it's we're getting the asphalt from whoever or whatever every year, we may have more pipe that we're putting in the ground this year and the next year we're not, but it's
different.
Job specific, each project specific to within itself.
I was just thinking the larger things that we know, you know, steel, I'm looking at there's 115, there's nothing larger than that. You got 76 at EDC3. But if you know it's the same project or you have a 3-year project or a phase project that you know you're going to use X amount of material in, that you know that on the front end, and then you can save on the back end. But I understand.
So a large project that would go over a 2 or 3 year period,
right,
we would have all those requests for purchase or direct purchases sent to us right up front,
right,
where we would have them issued, mm-hmm, and it would just, there again, it's back on the contractor to bring the material in as he needs it. But we would, all our direct purchases, the goal is to get it issued up front, executed, and the city to get out of the way and let them build it.
Chair, do you want to, so the $250, $100, $1,000 number, wherever you land, but at least Public Works has thought about what they think the number makes sense to them. We should come up with different numbers for the JSEB, the smaller projects, and we could write that into the bill.
Yeah, I was wondering, how do we create the JSEB exception? So let's say, for the sake of discussion, we use the $250 as the threshold. To say above that has to be a direct purchase. So you've got a project that's $100,000, and you have the only bidders on that project are non-JSEB companies. Then we let them do it. But if in fact one of those companies is a JSEB, I'm putting this in the form of a question of a scenario for Dustin to think about. So, okay, you've got 10 bidders on it. One of them is a JSEB bidder. In order for them to take advantage of the purchasing power that the others have, we then would purchase that equipment. That factor comes out of everybody's bids.
They would include the tax in their bid, and when we pull the material out for direct purchase it, we take the material cost plus the sales tax and bring it back in.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. So I don't know if
because that
we need to say JSEP or if we need to identify projects specific $100,000 and less project.
Could be a different way of doing it. I see what you're saying.
To do a
make it
$10,000
JSEP directed project.
But
yeah, so correct. Sure. I think you could do it that way.
So through the chair, so if we, I think the best way to do it is, JSEB administrator is going to establish either a participation goal on competitive solicitations, a set aside, which is 100% JSEB, or encouragement. So if we do something for 100% set aside, that means only JSEBs can bid on those projects. That threshold should be set with the JSEP in mind, the small emerging business in mind. Then you have a participation competitive solicitation where a large prime might get the contract, but they're required to hire 20% JSEB companies. So there needs to be something that speaks to the participation.
Right.
So this doesn't necessarily really impact JSEB one way or the other if we set a threshold. If we don't have a threshold.
If they're not
at a disadvantage under the existing system.
If it's a project, if it's an ITB for some type of, you know, sidewalk repair, it could potentially affect them.
Mm-hmm.
Is a lot of those projects are low dollar threshold.
I'm just, you know, I want to be able, this is the city bill, the JSEPs, right? But I want to make sure that the JSEPs are not being dismissed. You know, we want to use JSEPs in-house as well, whether it's Public Works or any other municipality within our organization. And I say that because I've heard it over and over again that the JSEPs, they get certified, but yet they don't get the opportunity. And so I just want to make sure as we go forward and we have projects, which we have quite a few projects coming down the pipeline internally and externally, that and a new administrator to have an oversight of that and not just say we have it on paper and or, you know, our best effort. That's not good enough anymore. And I think we need to call it as we see it. And so I want to make sure going forward in the next few years that we have some comps that we can go back and say, you know, we had X amount of JSEPs or we had X amount of prime, you know. So everybody get a piece of the, you know, get a piece of the pie.
I withdraw my thought.
I would.
Don't know the answer, you don't ask the question, right?
I'd say, yeah, we look at a 10% on JSEP or 10,000 on okay. JSEP, and you know, if that would be JSEP set aside projects, but not JSEP participation, is because they could be on a massive participation,
right,
and that they would fall under the umbrella of the 100,000.
And I think also in the application process, you know, we know up front, you know, that there's opportunity for JSEPs to participate.
I think that the 10,000 would definitely benefit JSEP set aside projects. So just.
Now, I'm just throwing this out there because Dustin wanted another report to do to you, to turn in to you. Would the council be, I mean, would it be helpful since we're, you know, just to the discussion on whether or not this is advantageous program to just have a little report to say how often have we used the direct services, how much taxes, you know, have we saved in the past fiscal year, just so that you know, and then maybe in a year from now, if it's not, you know, justifiable, maybe you nix the whole program altogether.
Do we go with the sunset on that as well, or do we separate it?
Yeah, I think it, giving you soft counsel, it makes better sense on the local business reference to do the sunset. On something like this point about saving the city cost savings, I really just think a report to the council. And if you get that report and you it gives you pause or you feel like it's not justifying it, we can always come back with legislation.
Well, the report, my only concern with the report, it's going to tell you how much you saved on sales tax, but it's not going to tell you what it costs you had you not put them through the direct purchase process. You get my point?
Yeah, I mean, but you would still.
It would not capture the below the line expense that we would have incurred had we not taken it, purchased it directly.
But why couldn't that be included in?
I don't don't know how you
capture it. Sure, just wants more to do.
You would have to capture it somehow.
If I could just put this on the record, our system, our Oracle Fusion ERP OneCloud system, is a very intuitive reporting system. We can generate automated reports that could be emailed to whoever would like them on a monthly basis.
And I think, too, Destin, for a lot of us, which I will be one of those ones that will be rotating off in four years, it's kind of like the Mason Tillman. You know, if I had not come in and inquired about it, we probably wouldn't be doing the study right now. So I want to make sure whatever we put in place, that it's not associated to the people who are on the council, that it should come up on somebody's radar, whether it's the legislative or your office, to ensure that that report is done. You know, every 6 months, every, you know, however you want to set it up, because I would hate for us to do this work and then after the person leaves, nobody does it, you know. So I don't know how we can, and Lasiki, I know you can probably do some language or whatever, but that's my concern. Is that when people leave, it gets brushed under the rug unless it comes back with somebody who has that interest. That's all.
So in the spirit of what Councilmember Pittman has just said, the auditors are constantly giving, I won't say constantly, but you have reports that you sent to us X amount, like quarterly or something like that. So are those reports like in an ordinance, or are they required? Because if that's the case, then we may want to look at some legislation that the report... Once again, I'm looking at Dustin's face like, yeah, sure, thanks, Councilmember Clark Murray, if we could do some legislation to require it, so that way it's not associated with any particular council member. It's something that needs to be, the information is given to the council members on a regular basis so that they understand what's happening with the program.
I think we've got some direction here, so I appreciate everyone's input. The next little next topic I want to get on. Okay, thank you, Ms. Pittman, for coming. Is the local preference, and I think we've got some interest in this as well. To kind of bring up to date where I've been looking at things I've been looking at on this. After discussing with you or hearing some of the discussions in neighborhoods the other morning, mm-hmm. Is we've went back and looked at just going ahead with the same footprint of what the Northeast Florida Regional Council entails. So that would be the all the counties and the cities that are within there. So even though like St. John's County already has their local preference that don't include anybody, our local preference will include St. John's, Nassau, Clay, Putnam, Flagler,
I think it's Baker.
Set the lead. No, I'll take the lead on 7 counties, I believe.
Yes, sir. And so that, and basically it follows the same spirit as the interlocal agreement that we already have with the labor, and also it's kind of goes along with that. And then definitely that'd be the framework, and then we would basically be doing a tier system based on participation level based on dollar amount. So it's pretty well proportional. The lower dollar amount, the higher participation, the higher dollar amount, the lower participation requirement. Mm-hmm. So then that would help bring, eliminate any potential hostilities out there from other agencies that we were, hearing about. But just to, I had Dustin provide some numbers from what's 22 23, the non-local businesses that we paid here was $2.2 billion. The local business that we paid here over those 2 years was $1.3 billion. And so a total of $3.6 billion, just rough numbers. That's what we would like to see that in our seven-county footprint, that 2.2 come down. Is it going to totally go away? No. But as much as what I want to do is try to keep as much in our economy as possible. So.
So a question about the numbers to Mr. Freeman. So the non-local, well, maybe if I put it this way, it will be a little quicker. So local is just Duval County, no surrounding counties?
Yes, ma'am. So my data pool was done within, 24-hour request from the council member. It wasn't validated. The parameters that I included was total city spend for Duval County. That includes registered as a supplier in the city. That's it.
Thank you.
I'm guessing you might want to put a finer tooth on that one as the second time around, because the mailing address may not be a local address, but it could be a local company.
Yes, sir. And also some of the non-local companies listed, like Anheuser-Busch, for instance.
Right. Right. So I think we need to make sure we understand when we say non-local, what does that mean? Truly, of the non-locals in New York, and as you said, outside Duval County, if they are part of the seven-county neighborhood, I would consider them, even in this look, as local. Okay.
If I can
just
set parameters.
Yeah, you've got some time to work that up. I think you're on the right track with respect to this one, but I want to make sure that we understand what the magnitude. I'd be curious, I hate to put Ms. Sickler or Steve on the spot again, but do you have a concern with respect the possibility of a local preference in terms of impacting your ability to do what you need to do and deliver in a timely fashion?
I have a couple of items that, and Councilmember Gay, we've talked with him about this. So there's two parts of it. One is on the bidding side, we're already receiving a low number of bids, and we're also primarily receiving bids from local entities at this time. So we pulled 3 years of bids for Public Works, and out of 70 projects that were bid, six of them were to out-of-town firms. So it's a small percentage right now. And so as far as the administrative side, in this case, it's on potentially on Dustin's side, the paperwork required to track those types of the bids that will require going back to the local firm and those kinds of processes, that it's, it's a fair amount of work to do that in order to, address an item that we think there aren't that many incidences where it's going to be an issue. The other side of it is that, we do want more talent to come to town, and trying to, how we express the city's desire to get more contractors to come to town, that this may have a chilling effect on that particular goal. Of course, there's multiple goals, so that from a public works standpoint, those are the items that we think, from a budget standpoint, the fewer bids that we have, the higher prices we potentially pay. And we already have several projects, many projects that are on hold for lack of budget. And, we would not want that to be a continuing concern.
You see a lack of budget, which also may include lack of bids as well, correct?
Lack of bids, yes, and increasing prices. And when local resources are stretched, the same contractors get multiple projects, it can also slow things down. That's not true of every local contractor. We have some great ones that do keep up with it, but there is the possibility that you know, if you stretch your local firms too heavily, then projects stall as well because of that, because there's too many projects per each smaller local contractor.
You know, in the same contest that we are running some of our projects, we get few bids on. You know, budgets are being blown up, and a lot of that, you know, you got to put into factors of the economy. Period.
Absolutely.
And you got the whole workforce is depleted out there. And so it's a risk to take too much work and get in a bad situation. So, you know, without a local preference, you know, we're not meeting budgets, you know, but I'm all about that, the getting new businesses in here, but I'm also about, what about the businesses that's been here plowing the ground, planting, and we don't do nothing for them. Time and time again, they see new business come in, and they get all kind of concessions and benefits, and local people don't get any preference. You go down to Sarasota, you go to Tampa, you go to Leon County. They have a network of counties that they sit here and give that local preference on, and so they take care of people first. So when you go to work down there, if they've got a percentage, 10% local preference, well, you know right off the bat, you got to be 10.1% low before you, if you're going to get it. So it's not like it's an after the fact that we would tell them, they would know that right up front coming. So I won't.
Let me just offer real quick. Interestingly enough, my Tuesday morning Mandarin Rotary Club meeting, we had Donnie Bush from Miller Electric come and talked about how they've expanded to the north, to the far, to Arkansas, to Texas, to Atlanta, Savannah, and other cities. They've been able to grow their local company exponentially because of the opportunity to go outside of this market. And I don't want us to have a reputation that we discourage others from impacting the success of Miller Electric or other companies that are growing here, grown locally, established locally, in competing in other markets. So it goes beyond the seven county region too.
Yeah, yeah, and it's definitely Miller is one of the top exceptions.
Absolutely.
So with that, I'll go ahead and open up for. We'll just do 3-minute public comment. We got two. Cards. The first one be Mike Kevlin. Sorry, sir. Hey, you should have an easy name like mine.
So I'm Mike Kevlin. I am here today on behalf of the National Utility Contractors Association of North Florida. We represent 100 members, mostly within that seven county region, mostly in five of the seven, but that's another story. I'm vice president at John Woody Incorporated. We do water and sewer pipes. We've been in Jacksonville since 1979. I haven't been, but the company has been. And I was coming up to express some concerns about the local preference bill as it was written, but as it's been re-amended here, we have no issues with that. We kind of see that seven county region as we're based here in Jacksonville. We're drawing our employees from that seven county region. We have a large percentage here in Jacksonville, but if you want to say that Baker County is not part of this region, I dare you to go sit on the side of I-10 heading west at 4:30 on Friday afternoon and count the number of company trucks that are heading that way, and you'll see how many people are actually considered part of this region. That's really all I have to say. As it's re-amended now, NUCA of North Florida is fully on board with what's going on there.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Next speaker, Chris Blank.
How you doing? I'm Chris Blank. I'm with J.B. Coxwell. J.B. Coxwell has been a firm in Jacksonville since 1983, established here. We have approximately 400 employees from the regional area. We are opposed to the bill because we believe in free and market competition, always has been. We take all comers that come to Jacksonville and continue to say that. We believe that it's best for the citizens of Jacksonville to always have the competitive spirit of a bid without any hitches or holds. But that being said, if there are interlocal agreements with every county and every county agrees to sign on it, we would be willing to consider it. One of our biggest concerns is the repercussions of this bill in some of the surrounding counties that we do work in, such as Clay County, Nassau County, and with St. John's new procurement code that's just been put out, how is that going to affect our business? Our employees, like Mike said, are from this local area. They're from, you know, Duval mostly, Baker County, St. John's, and Nassau County. So we collectively have all our employees come from this area. But at this time, we say that it should remain as is unless that agreement can be placed and there is reciprocity. If that's there, we're on board. But we want to make sure, because right now we don't feel it's going to happen. We do feel that it is going to protect and shelter the industry, and that's a position that we do not want to see Jacksonville get into. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. So that, let's see, Kia.
Just really quick. So we've been talking about two things today, and we also, during committee, talked about the possibility of floor amendments. Are you giving me direction to prepare anything with respect to council next Tuesday, or are we still
set? Yeah, I feel good about the tax savings that we move forward with the, and then establish the JSEP with the 10,000. I would, I guess our last hurdle would be to pinpoint where we're at with Public Works as far as the 100 to 250. I don't know if we can put the, how we could do that with a floor amendment to, that there's more data that needs to, that they were going to provide as.
I don't know if they're going to have, so the meeting's Tuesday, so I don't know if you would have that data. If you're not going to have that data by Tuesday, then we may not be ready to do a floor amendment if you feel like that's going to be necessary. Otherwise, you could just reach that agreement with Public Works on what the threshold number should be, and then we can move forward with that, you know, with that. But if it's contingent on the data, you would need that by Tuesday.
The other option would be just to defer the bill Tuesday, and then take it back to committee to revisit these two items. So we get a little bit more community conversation.
You could do that.
And we, that may be the best option, because I feel strongly about we need to go in with.
And I think some conversation with the surrounding counties, either through the regional council, whatever, to say if others, to speak to Mr. The Coxwell position, to right. Make sure that we are looking at a community-wide, seven county-wide, expectation that others will follow. And this,
right.
I hate up for us. Lead with your face sometimes. It's not necessarily a good idea. But I know St. John's has already done it, but I think we might want to get a better sense
the,
that
the,
others
the
are
posture
gonna
do. And I discussed this with OGC is whether they do a preference of their own, we would have the olive branch out there, and that they wouldn't be shielded from coming in here working. They would be part of our seven county
for a period of time,
right?
You can put it in place, put it over a span of 6 months, 10 months, whatever.
But the local preference, we have a it's got the 2-year sunset.
I was thinking going the other direction, put it in a position after a period of time to let the other county. I'm just thinking about it,
right?
To provide the opportunity for the other.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
To
yeah.
Put something like that.
Right.
Table to say that we're doing this together as opposed to us.
Yeah, I guess I'd be kind of reluctant because I wouldn't want to put them into a position where you got to decide.
Okay.
And I would basically keep an, we want to keep an open door.
Sure.
And we want to, and I think we'll find that there's, we have more business that goes and does right. work in these
so
counties.
We define local than, preference as the seven counties.
Than what they come here okay. to do work.
Okay.
And so, like I say, I think we don't want to alienate.
Sure.
And, you know, we've got a lot of good companies here, Coxwell, and, you know, different ones that, you know, they, that that's their, a lot of their heartbeat
sure.
is around these counties. We need to, I feel like we keep that olive branch out there.
Right, and we could separate out the amendment if you did want to move forward with something on Tuesday, if you feel more comfortable with the ODP so that the bill can, you know, keep moving. But Councilmember Boylan's right. You could totally postpone it at council, refer it back to committees for 2 weeks. Just keep in mind there are some time frames in there that we probably may need to put. If it's just a two-week deferral, I think that we can keep those time frames the same to have everything in place yeah. by July 1st.
I think a two-week deferral on the whole the whole bill would be advantageous for us to get all this dialed in, and then that way Steve and Nina can get
procedurally to push it back to committee.
Might I recommend a sub and re-refer?
Yeah.
So then we're the bill's at a great yeah. point as it is now, and then you're only talking about these two items.
And
the whole bill all over
again. Okay.
Does this procedurally push us back, does allow us to push it back to committee if we defer it for Tuesday? What do we? I guess we have to be a substitute re-refer.
It's going to be on the agenda yeah. as a sub move.
But
so
change it to a sub
re-refer. Change it to a sub re-refer. And then the council
Perfect.
President can assign it to whatever committee's here.
Okay. All right.
I think that's wise. Okay. Appreciate everyone coming out today. Thank you.
Monopoly.
Although I do have the subs ready. The two.